Hello, and welcome to Box Office Refund Podcast. I'm Nico Bell.
And I'm Ward.
And we review low-rated movies.
And decide if the critics were wrong.
Box Office Refund. Box Office Refund Podcast.
Ward, how you doing tonight?
I'm great. I've been watching some awesome stuff. Cannot wait to talk about it.
Yes, me too. I'm very, very excited. Would you like to give the rundown first?
All right, I've got quite a few things here. Miami Vice, Glass, ooh, Velvet Buzzsaw, First Reformed, The Nun, Searching, White Boy Rick, The Office Season 1.
Wow, you have watched some really good ones that I want to talk about that I've seen and not seen. So, okay. I watched Grace and Frankie Season 5, Punisher, I'm up to Episode 7. Mort, have you ever watched My Big Fat Fabulous Life on TLC?
No, My Big Fat Fabulous Life?
Yeah, that's right, with Whitney. Okay, well, today's your lucky day because I'm going to give you the rundown. I watched Polar, the 2019 Netflix movie.
I saw that.
Yeah. I watched Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt Season 4, Part 2, The Series is Ending, guys. This is it. And I watched The Masked Singer, which is a contest show.
Oh, I've heard of
I'm
that.
I'm excited to talk about. Okay. Now, okay. I'm going to do something, guys, listeners, if this is your first episode. I'm going to suggest to Ward a movie that we could start with to maybe open up the thing. He is going to respond back in a somewhat condescending tone that we should, yeah, that sounds great. But you know what we're actually going to do? And then he's going to pick a movie from his own sheet. But I actually think that this time we're going to agree on the movie to start. And I'm going to say.
Should I just jump in now or should I let you finish?
Velvet Buzzsaw. Okay, just go. What do you want to start with?
Yeah, I really just want to talk about Miami Vice really fast. Then we jump right into Velvet Buzzsaw.
Are you serious?
I am.
Fine. Did you watch the TV series, like the recent one? Or
there's a recent Miami Vice?
I think so. Okay, you tell me what you
saw. I mean, there's a movie from what, like 05, 06, yeah, somewhere there. I watched the original premiering in 1984, Miami Vice Season 1. Never seen it before. Knew of it. I always regarded it as just this cheesy 80s, you know, cop show that it's kind of, I don't want to say drivel, that's kind of strong, but not really something worth my time. Somehow, a couple weeks ago, I stumbled upon this YouTube clip. It's a scene from the first season, first episode of Miami Vice. Amazing clip. It's going to be linked in our show notes. But it's at night. Crockett and Tubbs are driving. It goes from, you know, car shots, like the wheel spinning, hood shot, back to Crockett and Tubbs just staring straight ahead, back to the car, back to Crockett and Tubbs. Tubbs is loading a shotgun. He says, like, how much time we got. Like, it's just a great scene. It sets up the anticipation. It looks cool. That scene alone sold me on Miami Vice. So I was like, all right, how do I get to see this? What looks amazing? Before, I thought it was not that cool. Well, streaming, you're going to pay $2 an episode, which is kind of pricey with 20 episodes in one season. Yeah. You can buy the full season at a discount for $20, but you can buy a physical DVD for $6.50 shipped to your door in 2 days. I own Miami Vice. I really enjoyed it. It's not some cheesy cop show. And yeah, it's easy to look at this through 2019 eyes. It is 35 years old, so you really can't do that. But even if you do, it's pretty cool. Like, it's pretty neat. It's like the fashion of the 80s. It's quintessentially 80s. If you look at it through the context of 1984, holy cow, this show really was doing something at this point never seen. You know, just the way it's framed and shot, it's very filmic. It looks like a movie a lot of times. I mean, the fact that the show was so into fashion. I know I've read quite a bit on Wikipedia about Miami Vice because I've been so into the show. Don Johnson, they didn't want to cast him in the show. He'd been in a number of failed pilots. He was kind of their last choice. They didn't have anybody else. They went with him. He wanted to kind of play it like a cowboy, dress like a cowboy because he had read what his character was like. And they said, no, we want you to be really into like Italian-American style fashion. And he thought, well, this isn't going to work. Little did he know, like, it created this whole frenzy, you know, movement where everybody wanted to dress like him. And I'll be honest, after watching this season, I really want to get some white linen pants and a pastel shirt and blazer, man. Like, I want to rock that look. I don't care.
I would love that.
But man, Miami Vice is a very cool show. And, you know, what it was doing in 1984 is crazy. And what it still does, I mean, yeah, we've seen a lot that's bettered it, but man, it's still a really neat show. And it is not cheesy 80s like I thought it was. It's really good.
Did you know that Vin Diesel is developing a Miami Vice reboot
right
now?
Oh, gosh, no.
And it's
is it going to star him?
It, well, I mean, I'm sure
Please
it will.
Please don't.
It should move forward. It's slated to move forward, and it should be airing as early as this year.
I'm not
How does that
thrilled,
feel?
Not thrilled.
How does that feel?
I mean,
nice,
I mean,
right?
It's like, you just can't recapture Miami Vice. You know, what this did for, like, the Ferrari car a cop drove, you know, the fashion, like, everything about this, like, how it pushed these plot lines in, like, 84, like, vice cops and drugs and smuggling and trafficking and, like, all these crazy things that, well, now, yeah, we see that stuff all the time, but in 84, I haven't done extensive research, but I doubt it was as prevalent. I mean, sure. I'd be curious to know what the contemporary shows of Miami Vice were, but I'd say, what, like, Alf and Growing Pains and stuff, who knows? I don't know. Miami Vice is cool, that's what I gotta say.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. We can put a link to people who can buy their own full season of Miami Vice for cheaper than you can stream it. That's good to know. I don't really think about buying DVDs anymore, but I guess if you can get them cheaper, why not, right?
Well, you know, I wasn't going to pay $20 for the season. That just seems rather pricey.
That's a lot for an old, yeah.
So I just looked around show. Thinking for $6.50, I could probably eBay this DVD if it doesn't work out. But now,
yeah, sure,
I'm keeping
not?
It, man. I'm going to frame it.
Okay, all right. Okay.
All right, what do you want to talk about? What's next on the agenda?
You know what? Forget it, Ward.
I want to remember it.
Can't butter me up now. You know what? I'm going to talk about Grace and Frankie.
Can we talk about Velvet Buzzsaw?
Nope. Oh. Grace and Frankie, season 5.
All right.
You know what? I love this show so much. I think it's adorable. I love that there are more shows now, especially on Netflix, that are geared toward a older demographic. I feel like they're often misrepresented in TV shows. They're just like the kind of that bubbling grandma that people put into the corner. And Grace and Frankie is so not that. I absolutely love it. I mean, they run a vibrator company. How incredibly amazing is that? So season 5 has a lot of humor, witty dialogue. If you're a big fan of the show, it progresses on with the plots. So there is going to be more love interest. There's a wedding, but I won't say who gets married. And the season 6 has been renewed. So I would say if you're looking for just like a fun, it's a bit of a dramedy, but a lot more on the comedy side. And it's just a good like girlfriend TV show to give it a try.
But it's definitely more in like kind of like this traditional sitcom type mold.
Absolutely. You know why I like those old modes is that you can sit and watch one episode and not feel committed to have to sit and watch every episode, like Game of Thrones or something like that. I like standalone TV shows where one episode can hold its own weight and you could just move from one episode to the next. You can skip an episode, whatever. I love those. And I think Grace and Frankie does a pretty good job of that. You can jump in and get a really good sense of what's going on without having to watch all 4 seasons.
So you would recommend this show?
I would recommend it.
Well, I've seen the first 3 seasons, and I would not recommend it. But it just...
Really?
You I mean, not like that it? It's not bad. Like, you know, the writing is not bad. It's just not my style of show. I don't care whether the people are old or not, but I like the serialized, like, episodic type content that's really deep. This is just, it's too light for me. I don't want something where I can just pop in anytime. I want something that's kind of deep and really going to, you know, ask a little bit of me. And by the way, this is perfectly fine. Yeah. It can be really funny at times. I give it that, but I don't care.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just think it's a personal preference. If you're, like, somebody who does want a bit of a deeper show, this isn't for you. But if you're just looking to unwind at the end of the day and you just have a half hour or an hour, you know, pop this on and you'll be relaxed and in a good mood when it's over.
I just remember when I did watch it, I always thought, man, the funniest scenes are when the entire family's in one room. But that happens so infrequently that it's just, man, it needs to happen more.
I will say that June Diane Raphael kind of steals the show. When she is on screen, she steals the screen. She plays this really self-assured, kind of badass boss lady, but secretly inside, she is just as insecure and a mess as everybody else, and I absolutely love her. So if nothing else, I watch just to see what her character is going to be doing.
All right, up next.
Okay. Well, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Well, then I'm going to say Glass.
Okay, don't spoil too much, okay?
All right, I will spoil very little, if probably nothing. So this is the part of the trilogy of Unbreakable, Split, and now Glass. And I don't know. I mean, if you watch Split, this is kind of in the same vein. Because really the most amazing thing about Split was that it was a backdoor sequel to Unbreakable. And if you take out the last 2 minutes, I'm not sure I'd really care about that movie at all. And so Glass, I don't know. Like the first third is pretty cool. It's like, oh man, this is crazy. Some neat things here. We get some fights. Then the middle, I mean, I don't think this is a spoiler because this has been in the trailers and all their posters. The three quote unquote superheroes, Mr. Glass, the Beast, Kevin Wendell Crumb, and David Dunn, they're locked in a psychiatric hospital. Well, this is the point when the movie begins to drag because these very super people are stuck doing absolutely nothing. They're being talked to by a doctor. It just goes on for way too long. We get into some side character stuff that at first I thought, well, this seems like a waste of my time. I don't care about the side characters. I care about the main characters, as you typically do in a movie. That's just kind of standard. But then in the end, I thought, oh, are they going to do something cool with these side characters? Like, because they all have kind of a link to each of the superheroes. No, they do nothing with that. The last third of this movie, completely underwhelming. I mean, towards the end, there's some really big exposition moments where the characters are like, look, let me tell you, in the end of the movie, sometimes there's a showdown where the bad guy and good guy fight. Really? Like, the movie's going to stop, put me on hold, and tell me that? It's just dumb. And I don't even buy, like, the actress saying that, I feel like she's rolling her eyes in her mind as she says this. And so the movie tells me there's a showdown. I'm expecting a showdown because it told me there's a showdown. That showdown's so underwhelming. Like, I mean, I get that this isn't going to be the Avengers with two dozen people on screen kicking butt. I expected two people. I expected to be kind of amazed at their fight. I was not. Underwhelming. And then, like, how this ends, like, it ends and it ends again because we're told, oh, what you thought this movie is, it wasn't that, it was this. I just wanted to tell the movie, screw you, movie. I paid for this, and this is what you're giving me. This is stupid. Like, so to sum up, there's Unbreakable, there's Split, there's Glass. Throw away Split and Glass. Unbreakable's great. Everything that followed really isn't. And part of that is Unbreakable is grounded. It kind of, the question was, what if a normal man became a superhero? I mean, Split goes a little crazier. Glass is kind of the same vein, but in the end, it kind of takes it to another place. It's, I would say, wildly unbelievable and kind of silly.
Wow.
Didn't like it.
Well, I was looking. It says that it's about to cross over the 200 million.
Oh, I will say, though, I was very negative. I will say, not as bad as reviews led me to believe.
Okay. Well, it has a 30% in Rotten Tomato as of now, a 7 out of 10 on IMDb, but a 42% on Metacritic. So maybe mixed reviews, it looks like.
Well, they really should be mixed. It's really just not that good. Like, there are a couple scenes that are kind of cool. They're neat moments. But I guess I went in expecting something more like Unbreakable that really I was like, oh, wow, what a cool scene. Oh, this is so amazing. Like, I can't, like, this ending, whoa. There are not enough whoa moments. And the whoa moments we get are half whoa. If that's
Wait,
such a
I'm
thing.
Sorry. Are you suggesting that M. Night didn't live up to his expectations as a director?
He's been on the
Are
rebound.
Are you saying, we've had this discussion before.
He's been rebounding, but I mean this.
Do you feel like he's taken a step back?
Well, you know, I mean, he has propensity for twists and he feels like the need to do some kind of twist here. And there's just a lot of things that don't work, that are underwhelming, that it, I mean, there's an escape at a point in this movie out of a maximum security place. How do they escape? They just walk out the door. Nobody recognizes them. Well, I mean, I don't know. In a maximum security place, you kind of should be, you know, you should know what your prisoners look like. There should be security measures where they can't just walk out the front door. There's a lot of little things that, if you think about for more than 2 seconds, it's like, well, that makes no sense. Like, this, the way this happens, just, it doesn't work. And in summary, the movie just doesn't work. Unbreakable is awesome. And this,
doesn't work.
But again, not as bad as reviews led me to believe.
Okay.
And I still don't recommend it.
Still don't recommend it. All right. Well, I've been watching The Punisher. Have you started watching? Are you going to watch The Punisher?
I have a passing interest. I watched The Punisher season one. Didn't love it, but I liked it. I liked it enough to know The Punisher season two when it was coming out and to put it on kind of my things to watch. But there's just so much stuff out there that it's very close to getting cut because Netflix keeps releasing new stuff every week and it's hard to keep up.
It is hard to keep up. I'm on episode 7. I'm getting closer to the end. And now that I have a better idea of what is going on this season, I will say it's a bit disjointed. I still enjoy it. I still love Frank Castle as a character. We get a lot more into the PTSD sort of side of things. But there's two storylines going on. And they were presented in the beginning of this season as having equal value. And as the season is progressing, one storyline has gotten completely pushed aside. Like, doesn't even get talked about except in passing in episodes. And multiple episodes have passed like that. So I feel like now the storylines are competing with each other and it's just being very disjointed. And I don't know how they're going to rectify that and how it's all going to come together in the end. And different subplots are being the split and a lot is going on. So the simplicity of like season one, where we're just watching Frank kill a bunch of bad guys and we're just enjoying it for that, is becoming a bit more muddied in season two. I'm still enjoying it because I still enjoy the Punisher, and stylistically I still enjoy it, and there's still plenty of, you know, blood and fight scenes, but I think maybe they're trying to do too many things in one.
Quick question on season two. I had an inkling there's going to be a subplot in the season about Frank's very small baby hands. Is that true?
Frank's very small baby hands?
Is that a subplot or not? I had a feeling.
You know what?
It might be.
It's not yet, but in fairness, I'm not done with the season.
Okay.
And because so many subplots are splintering off, I don't know.
Could go there. Maybe. Well, if it goes there, I want to know, because that might be the push
I
need to
know.
Watch the season.
Perfect. Okay. All right. What's next on your list?
Velvet Buzzsaw.
Oh, are we getting to Velvet Buzzsaw?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So Velvet Buzzsaw, it had Jake Gyllenhaal. That's pretty much all I need, because that dude, he picks these cool roles. He really just, he's like a different person in every role. And it really fascinates me how he can do that. Because
he's great.
The mannerisms, like even the way he walks and talks, it's unreal. And then I saw this was by Dan Gilroy, which he did Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal and Renee Russo. They both returned in this movie. So I'm like, okay. Let's give this a shot. Because it looks, on the surface, it looks interesting. It's about kind of the art world and paintings. And I'm like, okay, we're getting into the pretentiousness of the art world. There's some stuff to mine there.
Sure.
I mean, what this movie, I assume, wants to do and what it actually accomplishes are kind of wildly different. This treads a lot of the same ground as Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler was this movie that criticized journalism and how it's all about, you know, kind of greed in a way, and I'm going to use that word to dive into Velvet Buzzsaw, but kind of the greed of getting the gruesome story because that's what sells, and it's all about numbers. So in Velvet Buzzsaw, it's similar. It's art, and oh, these people, they're not about the creativity. It's about the greed and how, you know, how Jake Gyllenhaal's this art critic feeds into the machine of making money, how you have art, I don't know, like studio people that run exhibits, and they're all just kind of, it's not really about the art, it's about the money and making money off things, and how do you exacerbate that? How do you scam and cheat, lie and steal to do that? Which is interesting, and you know, that against pretentious art, okay, sure, I'm in. But what this wants to do and what it does, I guess I'm leaving out the most important part. This is paired with the horror genre, like this, and that's sort of problematic in a number of ways because there's so little explanation, so little, like, hey man, it's just voodoo. Like, if they just throw that again, all you're gonna see is just voodoo, man. Don't question it, it's just voodoo. Like, that's enough of explanation that, okay, fine, I'll give you that. There's no explanation, and some things I wanted to know how that worked. And, like, at the end, I guess I kind of get it that, oh, if you're greedy, you'll die, and if you're not, you'll probably be okay. But it's kind of muddy, and it ends almost with this kind of The Ring type thing, but kind of not. It wanted to be Nightcrawler again, and it's not.
So I agree fully that it was trying to be something that it's not. It strived in, I interpreted it as these people were profiting off of someone's art created by madness. Like, they were profiting off this man's pain and horrible childhood and traumatic experiences, because that is how he created his art. So for people who haven't seen it, this old man dies. And he leaves all of his artwork behind, and he leaves very specific instructions to destroy every single piece. But our character comes in and takes all that art, and she starts to sell it because she's about, well, she did lose her job and she needs to have money. So she's kind of desperate, and she doesn't tell anybody at the time that it was meant to be destroyed.
Well, and then just to interject, it's not just about money. It's also money, but she can use that as a stepping stone to... Yeah, she was, what, like an assistant before? Now maybe she can be something more important.
Yes, she got demoted from being a secretary or being a receptionist. So she is as low can get right now. And she wants to be the Renee level of curating and that level of the art world. So I think it's about taking advantage of other people's pain and profiting off of other people's pain and creativity when they clearly had no intention of doing it. But there was a lot of plot holes. The origins of this darkness, I had so many questions about.
Yeah, because they don't answer anything about that. Like, it's a big mystery, and it's too much of a mystery. Because Deese, the artist is Deese. He is arguably the most fascinating character. Because how is he doing this? Is this some kind of, like, spinoff of what he's doing? I mean, they say at one point his paintings, the black is made of blood. Okay, like, why is that? Does that do something? Like, how does it all relate? And at one point, I thought, okay, Deez's paintings are magical. They can come to life. Well, no, like any art, like in any vicinity can come to life, but I just don't know the rules. Like, how does that work? Because we see art that's not his come to life and kill people.
Yes.
But how?
Oh, you're right. How? You're right. That's a really good point. I didn't actually think about that, yeah. But you're absolutely right. Because
if it's just Deez's work, like, it makes no sense, yes. But I'll buy yes. that for the sake of this, but any art does it, and I don't get it.
Yeah, I didn't make that connection. I will say I had problems with Deez's backstory, and I think if they had cleared up the backstory, I would have understood him better. He was in a family. He had a mom, a dad, and some sort of sibling. There was a fire in the house. The dad and Deez survived. The dad was like, I think they say something like torturous or some huge adverb or adjective.
Some blanket statement that really tells us nothing.
But we learned that he was just horrific toward his son. So now we know that Deez has been severely abused. He ends up, I think, going into the military or something. I don't know exactly. Yeah. Okay, and then kind of disappears for 30 years, ends up working at like a vet, not, well, like a veterans crematorium or something? Or
I would have said veterans hospital, but you could be right.
Veterans hospital. And then, you know, he has his apartment, he makes his paint, and he dies. If they were setting it up that Deez had something within him, some sort of darkness within him that could manifest and kill people, that he was trying to control through his artwork, then they should have made him evil from the start. His dad was the evil one, and the fire that started seemed to be completely accidental. I think it would have worked better if Deez had started the fire.
Oh, I kind of wonder if he did start the fire. Like, I mean, they don't
well,
say
they never...
it. Yeah.
Exactly. But because the dad is so horrifically evil toward him, it makes you think, like, he wasn't born evil. It was a nature versus nurture sort of battle where the dad's evilness got passed on to the son. And then the son worked it out through his artwork. But I just think it would have been better if they had planted the seed that he was born evil. And that is how he progressed through life. I don't know. I felt like it was disjointed. And then
well,
for him
here's
to be
a question about his art.
Go ahead.
I mean, is it... I'm not clear on this. Does his art alone kill people? Or is it his art combined with greedy people kill people? Because if it's his... Let's say it's his art alone. Why does he paint so prolifically? Why not just don't paint? Or is he compelled to by some like evil force to paint? I
see, that's the question.
I mean, if this movie should be about Deez.
Yes, because if he had an evil force in him, if he had set that fire to kill his whole family, and like his dad somehow survived and became drunk and started beating up on him because he knew he was evil, that I could get behind. Because then he is painting evilness into his paintings, knowing it, and like I guess trying to maybe get out the evil or contain the evil in some way. I don't know. But then he asks for them to be destroyed. So that makes me think that he had no supernatural power at all. Because if they had destroyed it, that would have been fine.
Movie's over.
And part of the story is about how art doesn't need to be seen to be art. I mean, that's one of the premises. So I don't know. I'm very confused on how it'll happen. And you're so right. I didn't even think about how all the other art came to life and was killing them. And I think it's anybody who profited, anybody who bought the art died.
Well, it's not just the act of buying, though. It's trying to profit because, like, at the very end, I mean, this is a little spoiler, but, you know,
that's what I was just going to,
We discover that, you know, somebody, I don't know, like some hobo found the art and he's selling it. And, you know, he sells it to somebody. At first, I thought, oh, this is the ring type scenario where it keeps continuing where they buy it, they die. But then the people that bought it, they bought it because they truly loved it. They weren't, they didn't buy it to like flip it. So I kind of wonder, does that mean they're okay? Because they're not trying to profit off of it. They just like the art and like they see it on the streets. So they it's unclear. I mean, I think the point of this movie
is unclear.
You know, the art world is creatively bankrupt. One problem is I'm not really familiar with the art world. That's kind of a snooty exclusive bunch anyway, so like journalism from Nightcrawler, like I can get into that world, like I get that. The art world I'm not as clear about, so this just is kind of highbrow above me anyway.
One of the things I wanted to mention, and like you had said, part of the problem is that it was a horror movie, and I think that's absolutely right because they build it as a horror movie. The previews were horror in nature, so when I sat down to watch this I thought I was getting a horror movie, and it is not really a horror movie.
When Jake Gyllenhaal first comes on screen, you're thinking, this is not his horror movie. Yeah. His name, Morph Vanderwalt. Like, the names in this are awesome. Rene Russo is like Fandora. No, Redora Hayes. Some neat names in this. I don't know what
they are. Some really neat names, I will say. The last 20 minutes of this movie is what I had wished the entire movie was. That's
just a slasher in essence, right?
A bit, but they were cool kills. Like, we can't talk about it. We're not going to spoil, but like, they were pretty cool kills. They were creative and fun, and I was engaged. I mean, I was kind of bored until the last 20 minutes. So,
well, there's only so many times you can say, oh, art's creatively bankrupt. Well, I mean, you said that in the first 5 minutes, you keep repeating it. Like, I get it, and?
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, and well, we're going to kill people every 5 minutes. All right, cool. Great job, Mindy.
Well, I'm glad that I wasn't the only one. Like, I went on social media afterwards to try and get some validation because everybody was just awing over this movie, and I could not find people that did not like this movie. It was seemed that people just absolutely loved it. But I think it's only because the last 20 minutes were so good that people forgot about how bad the middle of the movie was. Like, that's in my head the only way I can rationally
say that. I wouldn't say the last 20 minutes are all that good. I mean, yeah, they're interesting. Like, we kind of get to the, like, oh, things are really moving fast, but they're not great.
Maybe that's what it is, because the plot really did start to go quickly, and I was engaged in those last 20 minutes, so maybe that's...
Yeah, I was more so engaged in the last 20 minutes than the rest of the movie, but it's disappointing.
I agree.
It just feels like kind of a shallower Nightcrawler.
Yeah. I think
if Nightcrawler was crossed with a horror movie, I would like Nightcrawler as much. But I think with this kind of subject, how far can you... Like, you can only take it so far. I mean, maybe you could do something with it. It's a great idea. I'll give it that great idea.
Yeah.
It just doesn't quite come full circle.
I agree. All right. My turn to pick. Oh, look what's up. Big Fat Fabulous Life with Whitney Way Thor. I don't know if you realize, but I watch a lot of TLC and like reality stuff. And this one I've watched basically from the beginning because I love Whitney Way Thor. She does Big Girl Dance Club and No Body Shame campaign. And for anyone who has been watching or has missed a couple episodes, you really want to get on track with this season. We learn all sorts of fun stuff about Whitney, and it's the tour that she went on with Todd, and Buddy has a new girlfriend, and he's still recovering. Like, he's still fresh out of rehab from his drug addiction. And oh my gosh, Heather is redonkulous. She can't even be near Buddy. It's madness. So, yeah.
All right.
You're just like, yep.
I mean, I'm...
Anybody who watches it will feel my pain with the Heather and Buddy situation.
I'm looking at an IMDb and I'm just, okay,
yep.
Super.
But I just like that show. I really just wanted to give a shout out to that show because I watch it and I enjoy it. And that's really it. That's all I needed to say about it. Watch it. Enjoy it. Support plus size ladies doing their thing.
Are we out? Ready to move next?
Yeah, that's it. That's all I need. That's all I need to say.
First Reformed, a 2017 movie starring Ethan Hawke, Amanda Seyfried, Cedric the Entertainer.
Wait, what movie is this?
First Reformed.
I've never heard of that.
It is an amazing movie. So Ethan Hawke, he's this minister of a very small congregation, you know, like a dozen people. He's in New York, and he's kind of in a depression. A member of his church is having some issues with her husband, and he kind of dives on that rabbit hole, and that combined with how he's kind of done with the world, done with life, does not bode well. This movie has a very small focus, and it tackles some big issues. It jumps into a little bit of, you know, global warming, and Ethan Hawke is a minister. He kind of feels compelled to, well, you know, what is my job with global warming? Am I not tasked with taking care of God's creation, the world? And it's a very big question, and obviously it's a question a lot of people in the movie don't like. You know, he interacts with some business people that pollute, and, you know, they don't like him kind of bringing God into it, saying, well, you know, as a Christian, you're tasked with taking care of God's creation, are you not? You know, is God going to forgive us for what we've done to the earth? So it's really interesting. It's climate change and combined with his personal crises. Very well written, very well directed. And this is the movie, it stuck with me. You know, it's a movie that just will stick with you after it rolls. And there's some crazy moments in this that I kind of wonder, what am I watching? Is what I'm seeing really happening? What is this? I don't know. It is a look at responsibility from a number of different angles. Ethan Hawke, he proves that he is a great actor. He just apparently didn't always feel like acting. But I mean, this, he's such an intriguing character. And we don't fully know his motives. We know a lot about him. But the ambiguity of what's going on with him kind of makes him more authentic because people are very convoluted, very complicated. And he is that. Humans don't always make sense. Like, we see him doing stuff. I wonder, well, why would you go there? But at the same time, you have to remember, he's very depressed. Like, he is not happy. No, he's ill. He has some problems with his family, some tragic circumstances. And this is kind of like this way that, oh, maybe I can make a difference with this. And it's very fascinating movie. I would highly recommend it. Easily one of the best movies I will see this year.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I saw Polar, the 2019 Netflix movie, which has actually gotten pretty low reviews so far. And I almost kind of waited to see if we could watch it 1 week together and talk about. Do you want to do that sometime? Do you want to kind of save it?
We can. I feel like since you've brought it up, we at least have to talk about it a little bit. We can't just say, oh, we watched Polar. I'm not going to tell you about it. You got to say something about it. But yeah, we can do a full review later.
Okay. All right. Well, I will say that it has been classified as a neo-noir action film, and it's based off of a Dark Horse Comics comic book. It is about the world's top assassin, Duncan Vizsla, which is also known as the Black Kaiser, who is retiring from his former employee. It's like this big organization that has a bunch of assassins working for them. The employer is trying to kill all the retired assassins so that he doesn't have to pay their pension. Not terribly, like, unique in the world of assassin movies, but it has some very interesting choices. Duncan is played by, this says Mads Mikkelsen.
Mads Mikkelsen, he is the man. Like, he was a big selling point for me on this movie because that dude kills it any movie he's in.
It also has Vanessa Hudgens. The bad guy, the main bad guy, is played by Matt Lucas. Do you know who he is?
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Ton of stuff.
He was in that Alice in Wonderland live action remake.
Yeah. He's done Bridesmaids, Little Britain, Come Fly With Me, Pompidou. He's done a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine him as a villain, I'm sure whatever you're thinking of is 100% how he played it. He's always dressed in very flamboyant, like very bright colored suits. And he really delved into this role. I don't know if he hit the mark or not, but I enjoyed him on the screen nonetheless. I mean, we need more villains that are a little on the silly side. So, I don't know. I guess I don't want to say too much about it. But I thought it was okay. I liked watching it. I think stylistically it was really good. There is so much blood and gore in this movie. Like, if you are squeamish, just don't even watch it. There is a lot going on. Very, very bloody.
Don't eat Sloppy Joes before watching this movie.
Yeah, it's intense. There's some, like, torture scenes. There's a lot going on. So it hasn't been getting some very good reviews.
This movie is a tough one to do because it kind of falls in the you know, unique genre of what if a 13-year-old could make a movie, what would it look like? Kind of like this. Like, it has a lot of those little hallmarks, like, you know, TNA and blood and gore. And it's just hard to get that right. Like, it at times it feels like it kind of wants to be something like Sin City because it is comic book inspired. Yeah. You get that feeling a little bit.
Yeah.
And instead of kind of going for, like, dark and nuanced like Sin City, it's more like, well, let's just go really over the top and crank it up to 11. And really it feels like Mads Mikkelsen is in one movie, but they didn't tell him what movie he is really in. They just told him to do his thing, and they told him about, oh, this is a really silly movie, play it up. They forgot to tell Mads that. And if everybody was more like him, I think this movie would be better, but the tone is, it's just a little weird. Like, you go to Mads, the tone's one thing, you go somewhere else, it's something different. I want to like this movie. Like, it has a cool concept, but it's a tricky concept to get right, and it's hard to do. And I mean, overall, this movie, I don't know.
It's okay.
I will say there's text on the screen frequently about what city they're in, and the font, like the mismatch of fonts, really annoyed me.
There's lots of things. I had some dialogue issues. Vanessa Hudgens has, like, a monologue at one point, and her dialogue, it's as if she's reading from a book.
She may very well be.
Like, it was so, like, purple prose, and I cringed listening to it. But at the same time, I didn't hate it. You know, it was interesting enough that I watched the whole thing without playing on my phone. So it had my attention.
It's kind of like if, like Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill. What if some 2-bit hack made that? That's Polar. I mean, that's kind of mean.
I think that's probably.
But it's kind of true.
It could have been really great. It had potential.
Imagine Quentin Tarantino directing Polar. That would have been something to
yes,
see.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Imagine Troy Duffy directing Polar. What would that be like?
That's not funny.
I'm sorry. Let's I've been punching on Polar. Using Troy Duffy as a punching bag a lot. I need to stop that.
All right, what else is on your list?
I've got The Nun. And it,
I heard that was very underwhelming.
This is the Conjuring sequel. And like, I mean, when you have a movie that is a spinoff of one scene of another movie, like you kind of know what you're getting into. And I knew, but I still was curious because honestly, that scene was so good. In The Conjuring 2,
I know,
there's this scene where Vera Farmiga, I can't remember her character's name, she gets locked in this room with a painting of a nun. And it's pretty ghastly. And that scene is a wonderful scene. And James Wan is an expert at horror movies. Unfortunately, this movie is not directed by James Wan, which is probably the biggest problem. Because what's so disappointing about this movie is it has a great setting. It has great props. The production design is awesome. But the director does not know how to scare us. I mean, like, scenes that should be really full of tension that kind of draw it out to where you're on the edge of your seat, they never do that. It's like, oh man, this is getting slow. Let's have a jump scare real quick. Like, we can't slow down. And it ruins it. But this movie, it has everything it needs. Honestly, it's just bad directing. Like, it doesn't nail it. But, I mean, you had The Conjuring. You had The Conjuring 2. I think there's a spinoff from The Conjuring, like, about some doll. This is a spinoff of The Conjuring 2. And this tries to connect it back to The Conjuring, which it didn't really need to. It's so much of it. It's just, like, standard horror movie tropes. And at one point, towards the middle, the plot grinds to a halt, and the movie says, we're just going to jump scare you for 20 minutes here. Just sit back for a little while. And that kills it, too. I mean, jump scares, you can have a couple jump scares. But watch this and watch The Conjuring 2, and the craft of directing, it's unparalleled. Like, The Conjuring 2 is just head and shoulders better because James Wan knows how to do it, and he knows how to do it well. And he's the link missing here because all the pieces are here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically what I've heard from people who have seen it.
But, I mean, I wouldn't say don't watch it. Just realize, like, it's just kind of average. It could be a lot better than it is, and that's what is the most disappointing. That it's just underwhelming.
Underwhelming. Well, to lighten the mood, I watched The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Season 4, Part 2. So this is the end of the series. They decided not to keep it going, which is kind of sad. I mean, this is a Tina Fey little brainchild, and it's another really lighthearted, fun comedy. It's so incredibly silly. You know, Kimmy Schmidt is a mole woman who is one of, I believe, three or four women who were captured by this reverend cult leader.
Played by John Hamm.
Played by John Hamm. She does a lovely job on it every time he's on screen. And they eventually get released and they've missed, you know, 10 years of their lives and all the culture that comes with it. And they have to learn about computers and, you know, all the different things. So Kimmy Schmidt has been a lot of fun for me to watch there out the last couple of years. And I will say that Ellie Kemper plays her, and I think she did a great job. But I think that the character Titus really stole the show. And he's played by Titus Burgess, who is so larger than life. He was fabulous on it the whole entire thing. I hope we see him on TV again, because he played this really self-absorbed New York guy, and he just did it really great. So I hope that they either, well, they can't really bring it back to anything. They wrapped it up perfectly. So everything is done. The story is done. But I'm sure we'll see Ellie Kemper and Titus again on TV.
Well, you gave us an introduction that kind of like felt like it covered Season 1. Where are we in Season 4? I mean, it can be either at Part 2 or Part 1, but just in general, Season 4. Because I think I watched Season 1, and it's just not my kind of show. Like, I'm not going to say it's not as bad. It's just not my kind of show. It's for, like, what it is. Like, it does really well. But where are we in Season 4? Because I haven't watched past Season 1.
Well, Titus is trying to get Mikey back. Titus had a boyfriend, Mikey, who he fell in love with, and he's trying to get him back. And then, I guess I won't say anything about how it ends, but he's trying to get Mikey back. Kimmy Schmidt has written a children's book, and she has a job, a full-time job now, and she's trying to get her book out into the world. And then some of the other supporting characters are just trying to basically get their life in order, which is all they ever do. Jackie is trying to start her agency and keep that afloat. And I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. Who's Jackie?
And then it wraps up. Yep.
Who's Jackie?
Jackie, she's played by somebody really famous, but she is the one who has been helping
Kimmy live with her in season one?
She did live with her for a little bit. Okay. Yeah, she's been helping her out. She's a friend, so, yep.
All right, awesome.
What you got?
Searching. So,
oh, I saw that movie. Yeah.
I love movies that have a gimmick. And the gimmick with this was that the whole thing purportedly takes place on a laptop screen. Now, that's not quite true, but for the most part it is. You got this father, his 16-year-old daughter goes missing, and he breaks into her laptop to find her. So the whole movie pretty much takes place on a laptop. There's a couple of scenes that take place on a video camera away from the laptop. But man, like, I just love gimmick movies. There was Hardcore Henry, which was a movie where the whole thing is first person, like a video game.
Oh, that would make me so sick.
Not a great movie. Like, I like the gimmick. There was Victoria, which was a 2-hour single take shot. Like,
ooh.
One shot, no editing, no cutting, one shot, unbroken 2 hours. Like,
jeez.
I like gimmick movies. So when I saw this was taking place on a laptop, I had to watch it. I like gimmicks. And while this is a gimmick, it is such an engrossing gimmick. The movie, it does pretty much take place on a laptop screen. The dad searches through the daughter's social media, through her contacts, through images. And the camera, it's not like it's static on a laptop screen. It'll zoom in to certain bits of information. So there's a little bit of editing there that, you know, doesn't make this too boring. It's just one static shot. But, you know, the editing, it's just like a game of inches because the camera just moves here a little bit, there a little bit. But editing could have also ruined this. Like, they could have made this a lot more boring by one shot on the laptop, no moving, but they don't. And actually, I mean, I really feel like if this was shot traditionally, like, you know, typical scenes, I probably wouldn't care. Like, we know missing kids, we know these mysteries, but the way this unfolds makes it really interesting. And it's also cool because the dad's able to access so much information. And yeah, we know the internet's scary, but this kind of drives it home that this dad gets into a lot of stuff, finds out a lot about his daughter that he didn't even know. There's lots of twists and turns. I mean, some big twists and turns that I think they'd be too cheesy for a traditionally shot movie. And this kind of works. I thought this was really
cool.
Well,
I would say that I found it predictable. There are twists and turns, but I saw them coming.
Yeah, like the very big finale you saw coming? Like the...
Yeah.
How?
And,
well, I guess
we
can't go into too much. I don't want to spoil this, but...
I will say, okay, like the big reveal of what happened.
Yeah.
Yes, I knew that. Like, I pretty much figured that would happen. I will say, beyond that, like in the resolution part, I thought that was unbelievable.
That was a big surprise.
That
was
ridiculous.
That was like ending number two.
Yeah. Yes, I would say that. But there were hints all along the way, and I was like, that's going to play back. That's coming back. But I still loved the movie. I still thought it was really well done.
I mean, I almost feel like this is one of those movies that the fact it's not an absolute train wreck is what makes it so good, because this, you could easily screw this up. Like, there's just, when you make a gimmick like this, it's easy to screw it up because you don't have anything else to lean on. You don't have any other context to say, oh, well, we're like this movie. It's I mean, yeah, there's been movies that have been done on a screen before, but this is pretty unique and it does a great job. And I definitely recommend checking it out because I think just a cool moment in the very beginning when they get the new laptop, they set it up, and then you see, like, the profile's added. Then the daughter's older, her profile's added. You see, like, her backdrop or the desktop and how that changes. That was just a really cool introduction to this family, and so quick, too, and so effective.
Yeah.
That's just good storytelling.
Yeah, I would agree. I'd agree to check it out. All right, the last thing on my list is The Masked Singer. And I started watching this show because I really just had like 15 minutes to kill. So I just started watching the last end of it before. I don't even know what I watch after it anymore, but I just needed to kill 15 minutes before whatever I watch after it came on. So I watched the first couple episodes just for the reveal, and now I'm kind of hooked into it. It is a show where we call them celebrities. I feel like that's being a little nice for some of them, but famous people, famous people dress up in costume. They actually do sing, I think. I mean, it's singing. It's like singing, I guess. Two very popular songs. And then they have three judges. You have, not Melissa McCarthy.
Jenny McCarthy.
Jenny McCarthy, yes, right. And you have that girl from the Pussycat Dolls. Let me look this up. Masked Singer. Anyways, you have three judges, and they have to try to guess. They are awful at it, but I just wanted to see the reveals. So, if you haven't watched it, I won't tell you who to reveal, but I will say that it has been a lot of fun. They're not all singers. They're not all really popular people. There's some athletes, people from the sports world, And yeah, I can't wait to see who all the other ones are, because I have some guesses now. I've watched enough episodes where I'm fully invested, and I want to know who they are.
I believe I can confidently say I will never see this show.
It's just fun.
Well, yeah, like, for a reality-type TV show, it sounds like buckets
of fun.
Toasted
by Nick Cannon.
Ooh, now I'm sold.
Okay. Well, that's all I've got. You can go ahead. All
right. Let me wrap this up. I don't have much left. I've been rewatching The Office, the U.S. version. I feel like that's important to say because, you know, you get in that debate of UK versus U.S. I've seen both. Like them both for different reasons. I've watched season one, beginning to embark on season two. I'm not going to watch the entire series again because I don't know. I mean, at some point, Steve Carell's character of Michael became a flanderization of himself, where he was no longer like this earnest boss that just like didn't have social graces. He just became like a joke in of itself. So I don't know when that happens. I'm gonna guess season four. When that part happens, I'm gonna stop watching. But season one is so funny. I forgot how funny it is. And part of it is, I feel like you have to work in an office to get it, because some of this stuff, it hits a little too close to home. Like, it's almost not funny because I'm like, I know that person. I was talking to that person today. But man, and yeah. One neat thing this show does well, and I always like this when movies, TV, anything does this, is that the character reactions that in the background, they're not even a focus, you know, but when Michael makes some like terrible joke and you see Jim kind of behind him, almost out of frame, like just look on his face, man, that's good. And it gives these characters a chance to act and emote. And so many movies today forget to do that. That there's a lot of value, a lot of story conveyed in those moments. But man, this show, I've read people say season one's not that great, but it's pretty funny. So if it isn't that great, I can't wait to get into season two.
I will say that the reason I don't really rewatch The Office is the Jim and Pam love story. And I feel like they created this into a dramedy instead of a comedy. And I really don't want to sit down and watch The Office and feel any sort of emotion other than happiness or awkwardness watching Michael Scott and Dwight interact. And as soon as Jim and Pam really get together, I stop watching that show. I mean, I watched the whole series, but like, as far as rewatching it, I won't rewatch basically anything beyond like season three, because it's too heavy and I don't want to watch The Office and have heavy emotions. So that's my point on it.
Once the camera started leaving the office, that's also, you know, it became a little bit more than I want it to be. I mean, like, I'd forgotten how prevalent the Jim, Pam, unrequited love thing was. I mean, season one is six episodes long, and that's very heavy. I didn't remember it being that big of a plot point, but arguably it is the A plot of this show, and the B plot is The Office, which is not bad. Like, so far, you know, with what this is, that's fine. But yeah, I think you're right. Once they're together, I mean, there's always this neat thing when you're shipping for two characters, and then once that ship sails, well, then what do you hope for? You have this void that can't be filled. And I think, if I remember correctly, didn't they try to fill that with Dwight, Andy, and Angela? I don't know if
Is it Andy? Yeah.
Whoever Ed Helms played.
Yeah, you're right. Yep, Andy.
I think.
And then there was a season where, you know, Jim goes to work in some
Philly.
State.
Yeah, that was like
Philly. Yes,
that was right towards the end. I don't know if the very end, but towards the end.
Yeah, and that's when I really started to even kind of despise that whole relationship, because they're basically on the brink of divorce. Pam is sort of on the brink of having an affair.
Well, they bring the cameraman into the show. The cameraman appears on screen. Yeah.
I was like, what has The Office become? Like, this is not my office. This isn't why I sit down to watch this show. And I honestly, it ruined it for me, and I can't watch those episodes again. Man. It makes me sad. I know.
Well, I'm going to be rewatching this. So when it hits the tracks, please. I'm going to let you know. I'm going to let you know like when the point of no return happens, because I'm out then. But man, like season one, six episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
It's good.
And I feel like it's season four where it drops. We'll see. I'm going to let you know.
Okay.
White Boy Rick. This stars Matthew McConaughey and a bunch of other people. Doesn't really matter. Well, Brian Tyree Henry. I'll mention him because he's always really cool and stuff. It's a story, true story, of Richard Wershey Jr., who became an undercover informant for the FBI during the 80s and was ultimately arrested for drug trafficking and sentenced to life in prison, the longest sentence for a nonviolent offender.
Oh, I have so many questions. This is actually on my list of movies to watch, so don't spoil too much.
Well, I don't love it. Matthew McConaughey is great. Aww. He steals every scene. But I don't know. I mean, we've seen these undercover informant movies, and this hits a lot of the same notes. And like, yeah, he's a kid. Oh, that's so crazy. Oh, he's a white boy in a bad part of town with a bunch of black people. Like, wow, that's so funny. Like, they make fun of him because he's white. Okay, cool, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I did think the cop angle was interesting, how they, you know, they use him as an informant. Like, they use him when it's beneficial to them, and then when he's in a tight spot, well, if it benefits them, maybe they'll help him. If it doesn't benefit them, maybe they leave him out to dry. Like, that was kind of interesting, because he's a kid. Like, the cops, you know, kind of put him in these positions. But, I mean, I don't know. I just, it's not a content thing. I don't know where this fails. I mean, I guess it's just the writing, maybe the character development, because it's interesting to a degree, but I was kind of, I don't want to say bored, that strong of a word, but I was hoping for a little bit more.
All right, fair enough.
I mean, I don't know, I guess I just kept thinking of, oh man, what is that Johnny Depp, Al Pacino movie?
Oh,
Donnie Brasco. Donnie Brasco.
Oh, Donnie Brasco. Okay.
The movie kind of reminded me of that, which is bad because it just makes me want to watch Donnie Brasco because that movie is so phenomenal. And this is not.
Like that
so okay. It's just tough. I guess I'm old now to that point where like every movie reminds me of some other movie I've seen. And usually it reminds me of a better movie. And that's not a good thing.
Yeah, fair
enough. So I would not recommend White Boy Rick. I mean, it's not that it's bad. It's just, I feel like I've seen it a couple times before.
Sure.
That's it. That's all I got for this week.
All right. Awesome. Well, we'll wrap it up then. Ward, if people want to talk to you, see you, interact with you online, where can they go?
My first question would be, why do they want to see and interact with me online? But my follow-up would be, with WardWorks, just throw that into Google. See what turns up. Hopefully, it turns up one of my sites and profiles. If not, I hope you enjoy what you find.
Lovely. You can find me at Neagleville Fiction on Instagram or Twitter. You can find us at Box Office Refund on Instagram or Twitter or our website. So,
and I just got to say, we have a very amazing website. There are GIFs, there are images, there are jokes, there's memes. We also have episodes on our site. There's merchandise on our site. There's a lot of cool stuff on the site. And I go to it frequently just for the images and the memes because they're mildly funny. And on the internet, that's kind of the best you can hope for.
Okay, great. All right, well, thanks for listening to us. Guys, when we come back, we are going to have the much-waited, coveted Battlefield
maligned,
Earth episode.
Critiqued.
Yes. We found someone. Guys, we found someone who will defend this.
I have questions about that. I can't wait to talk to this person and ask them some questions.
It's going
to
be amazing.
Because I assume they're going to defend it ironically.
I assume that as well. But I'm kind of secretly hoping that he really legitimately
Well, even defending ironically, I have some questions. Like, I would love to see how he approaches the answers to the questions. I don't care how he defends it.
Boy.
Any attempt he makes, I'm happy for.
Oh, boy. All right, guys. Well, tune in next week and listen.
And I will just try not to blame him for the movie's fault, which might be difficult.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Box. Office. Refund. Box Office Refund Podcast.